When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manning calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, pops it left, throws it wide open, touchdown Giants! And a left corner of the end zone!
Touchdown!
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Mick Monaghan here with you on The Fan. 1 hour down, three more to go. I got until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. 888-808-1019. Rami on the other side. And we opened up with the Mets. And their frustrating, lost weekend against the Seattle Mariners, getting swept, outscored 22-1. And falling short offensively, which is really the only way they can beat you. And now we turn to the Yankees, who had a homestand against three underachieving, under 500 teams in Toronto, the Angels, and the Texas Rangers. And they managed to win five of those nine games, go 5-4, which I suppose is the bare minimum, but it's not really good enough. An underachieving homestand. They've been brutally bad at home since, you know, the beginning of the year when they were beating everybody. Since then, I believe now they are 2-7 in their last nine home series, which is just unbelievable to think. That's how bad it's been. Or 2-7-1, something like that, in their last nine or a 10, clearly. But you watched this game yesterday. You watched this series, really. I did have a chance to talk about the doubleheader yesterday. I was on The Fan. So obviously, a lot of things going right. Right? That's what I'll say about this Yankee team right now. A lot of positive things, whether it's Carlos Rodon pitching the way he pitched, whether it's Gerrit Cole pitching the way he pitched, and yeah, getting taken out of that game, and everyone's frustrated about it, but still, we can just look at it from Gerrit Cole getting on the right track. He wasn't brilliant, but 10 strikeouts, a lot of swing and miss. I mean, you look at his swing and miss stuff, it was like a 50% swing and miss rate, was getting real good swing and misses on his knuckle curve, was able to really mix in everything, looked much more like Gerrit Cole than he has at any point this year. And then Marcus Stroman yesterday, who's been brutally bad, just brutally bad for the last three or four starts, just completely ineffective, living in the middle of the strike zone where he gets pounded. And to bounce back and give them a really solid performance yesterday is a major, major, major positive. And then the other positive is we all know how great Juan Soto and Aaron Judge is, right? They're phenomenal. Soto had an enormous day, multiple home runs, killing it. Judge hits his 42nd of the year, hitting well over 320 now. A legitimate Triple Crown contender, as he's just the best baseball player in the world. We all know this. And we know the offense has scored a ton of runs, as they score 8 runs again. They've been great. But what they've still needed is a middle-of-the-lineup hitter to protect Aaron Judge. And right now, believe it or not, 2 weeks or so after they had J.D. Davis hitting cleanup against the New York Mets, right now they have legitimately two guys who you feel completely afford some level of protection. None's going to be enough to always pitch the Judge. He's that freaking good. But right now, whether it's Wells, who drove in 4 runs in the first game of the doubleheader on Saturday, and what he's been able to do offensively, really, as the best offensive catcher in the sport for over a month now, and what he's been able to do since Trevino went out with injury and been able to play every day has been incredible, and it's just good at bat after good at bat. I mean, he doesn't always come through, but he takes, like, it just seems like he's always got a 7 or 8 pitch at bat. We've seen him more than just pull on, you know, rip inside fastballs down the line or into the short porch. It's going the other way. It's gap hitting. It's sticking the bat out and just blooping one over the shortstop head with 2 strikes. Like, we have seen really good at bats. And someone who right now against right-handed pitching deserves to be the cleanup hitter for this team, giving Aaron Judge protection. And then, of course, what we saw yesterday from Giancarlo Stanton and the 3-run bomb, whether it's the 2-run 450-foot home run he hit the day before on Saturday in the back end of that ugly doubleheader when it got out of control, and then following it up today with a 3-run bomb after walking Aaron Judge. And that's the key. This Yankee team, if there is one thing that this Yankee team is going to have to do, right? One specific thing other than pitch better or, you know, like, hit better. Like, the one specific thing this team is going to need to do, especially offensively, is make teams pay when they walk Aaron Judge. I don't know if you can eradicate it. I don't know if you can eliminate it. I don't know if there is a threat great enough, even if you put Soto there, which is the only way to really even come close to eradicating it. But even, like, there's no way to make sure they pitch to Judge. But what they need to do is, when you walk them, make them pay. And now, for the first time, now the other day, again, we've seen Wells do it. I don't remember it specifically after an intentional walk. I know Judge got 6 hits in the series. He was 600, 6 for 10 in this series against Texas Rangers. And Wells came through with a couple doubles after Judge hits. But after a Judge walk, to have Giancarlo Stanton, who again has been the Yankees' best clutch hitter since 2020, it's not even close. For him to come through and take a breaking pitch down in the zone and literally go get it and just hit an absolute missile into the left field stands for a 3-run home run that you thought broke open the game at the time. That was just so good to see. And this lineup now, and I know they lost 2 out of 3 to Anaheim, and certainly, don't get me wrong, they, after taking the 2 or 3 against Boston and sweeping Philadelphia, this homestand is, extremely blah. All right, there is no real gut feeling. I don't feel awful about it because they won 2 out of 3. If that makes sense, 2 out of 3 of these series they won, but it's certainly not anything to beat your chest about or feel overly good about. They were supposed to do better than 5-4, especially the way they were playing, especially the way they're swinging the bats. But they are swinging the bats so much better, and other than maybe Volpe, you know, reverting back to the player he was a few weeks ago and not being the guy he was right after the All-Star break, the lineup feels so much more deep, so much better length to it, so much more confidence in the bottom of the order. And now that you have legitimate guys in the middle of that lineup, right, you've seen Gleyber Torres in both games of the doubleheader starts it with run scoring singles. He's been better. Verdugo's been much better as he was lacing doubles all over the place in the first game of the doubleheader. And now the clear cut, and I'm sorry, I know it's only 2 games, Stanton put together good at-bats throughout both of these games here. It wasn't a fluke 3-run home run. He had a double and a home run in game 2 of the doubleheader, and he hits an absolute missile for a 3-run shot in this game. He is looking like he's getting his timing back just in time to prove again that he is the most clutch Yankee on this team. And so, yes, all positives. The starting rotation, although it's a concern with Nestor Cortez, and it's a concern with Stroman still, I'm not ready to declare him fine. I'm not ready to declare Gerrit Cole back to being Gerrit Cole. But Rodon has now been on 5 consecutive really good starts. Cole just gave you a start that looked more like him than anything we've seen this year with 10 strikeouts. Stroman came through with a good bounce-back start after needing a couple days to work on some things, and hopefully he can find his groove and get back into just pitching, you know, 5-6 innings, giving up 1, 2, or 3 runs. Like, that's all you expect from Marcus Stroman. And with the way this offense has been swinging the bat, that should be good enough. So a lot of positives in this rather 5-4, 9-game homestand. But then there's the negatives. And this bullpen is going to drive us all nuts and crazy. And I get it. And certainly Weaver in the second game of the doubleheader coming in for Cole, and I understand everybody wants to blame Boone for bringing in Weaver. I'm sorry. All right? Was it a move I would have made? No. But they're not going to push Gerrit Cole. I talked about this yesterday. They're not going to push Gerrit Cole. And he brought in Luke Weaver to pitch the 6th inning with nobody on and 1 out. Get the outs, Luke. The guy's been their most consistent reliever. He's got a season whip about 0.87, and he's got an ERA just above 1 at home. He didn't bring in some middle reliever. Ron Marinaccio did not come out of the bullpen to pitch in that moment. He brought in Luke Weaver. Get the outs in this game. Leiter, who was brought over here, everybody's telling him he should be the closer because he's got swing and miss stuff. Need that swing and miss stuff as your closer. Leiter was terrible in this game. I believe he's given up 3 home runs in his last 45 innings or something, and he gave up 2 in this inning. And after the Judge and Soto go back-to-back and make it 8-3 to give up three runs in that inning, was brutal. And then we get to Clay Holmes. And let me just say this about Clay Holmes, and I want to be clear. Because on Twitter I defend him and I get into fights with people. I'm by no means saying that Clay Holmes has been perfect this year. I'm not an idiot. I have eyes. I'm not saying Clay Holmes is some great reliever who I have the utmost confidence in and, you know, is. I don't care how shaky it gets. I'm not worried about Clay Holmes. Of course I'm worried about Clay Holmes. But what I will tell you about yesterday's performance is that was one hell of a gutty performance. And that's right. I'm using the word gutty. The guy threw 45 pitches. And he didn't break. He bent, but he did not break. He has to come into an eighth inning of a game that was 8-3, and he probably had no thought of getting up in the eighth inning. He has to get up in the eighth inning, come in with the best hitter on the Texas Rangers team, two-time World Series MVP, hitting bullets all over the place in this series, Kyle Seager, with a runner on second, and he manages to get soft contact there, which I thought was going to kill him, but Gleyber Torres comes across and cuts off Volpe, which was very in vogue that inning, and we'll get to the defensive issues the team has, to make the play to get the last out of the eighth. Then he comes into the ninth, gets two strikeouts, by the way, and then walks, has a bad walk on one at bat, and then has a, what was it, a 9-10 pitch at bat, foul ball after foul ball after foul ball, walked a guy, gave up a bloop hit, soft contact again, a bloop hit that bounces in, gives up a run. He's throwing 45 pitches. Now, I'm not telling you it's a great performance. I'm not telling you, woohoo, Clay Holmes is the best. I'm not telling you I'm not scared at that moment. Yeah, did I think he was going to blow the game? Hell yes, I thought he was going to blow the game. As I was pacing the floor of my in-laws' house, and they're all wondering why I'm freaking nuts. My mother-in-law looking at me, oh, is today the playoffs? No. It's a random day in August. This is how I live, lady. You know this. But yeah, did I think he was going to blow the game? Yes. Hell yes, I did. So did you. So did everybody. But he didn't. His manager left him out there to throw 45 pitches. And the guy battled through, and he got a ground ball. And let me tell you this. You want to get mad at Clay Holmes? That's fine. You want to say, oh, he almost blew the game? That's fine. You know who I'm really pissed at? Gleyber Torres. Because I have defended Gleyber as well. These are my two guys. And not that I believe in them or love them or that they're my favorite players, but I think sometimes we get a little crazy. And sometimes we go over the top. And Gleyber Torres has been better offensively, and I didn't want him traded because I need as many good hitters as I can get. But I've defended the idea. Yeah, I know he's bad defensively. I know this. He's got to get it together. Hopefully the benching clears that. That moment, I have never been more sure of the idea that everyone's going to be right and Gleyber Torres is going to screw them in a big moment in this playoff series at some point in this postseason, because that was just straight up being terrified of the moment. That's it. That's all that was. That wasn't a tough read, a bad hop. That was just straight up. If you watch him field that ball, I have never in my life seen anything like that. I have never seen an infielder on what was the most obvious, simplest, just straight up easy ground ball right to a second baseman. Now, Clay Holmes, this is what I'm talking about. Because if they would have blown that, everybody would have still killed Clay Holmes. Thankfully, it would have been Gleyber as opposed to Volpe and Verdugo falling down, which cost them the game in Baltimore, because they don't want to pound those guys necessarily. It was easier to pound Clay Holmes, at least for Clay's sake. If it was Gleyber, people might have went nuts about Gleyber. But if that ground ball gets booted, Clay Holmes gets a blown save, and everybody talks about how he leads the American League in blown saves. If that ball would have not been fielded, I'm sorry. Again, I would have taken Clay Holmes right off the list of people I'm blaming for that game. Forget them. Because you know what? That's a play that has to be made. And if you watch Gleyber Torres come in and backhand a ground ball right at him between why did he backhand it? And then he almost falls down. I can't believe what happened. That, I'm sorry. Gleyber, I've been with you, man. I've been trying very hard. I've been trying to defend you. You absolutely deserve to get benched and pulled off the field, and that was it. You should have been back the next day. I agree with everything that happened. I thought you handled it perfectly. You said everything you were supposed to say. You've been hitting. You've been doing your job for the most part since the All-Star break, certainly. I'm trying to defend you. But my God, if that wasn't just a straight-up afraid-of-the-moment fielding of a ground ball than that I've ever freaking seen, that's the only explanation. He ran up to an easy ground ball and backhanded it between. The ball was going to be right between his legs, and he backhanded it and then almost fell down. I wouldn't have been surprised if he threw that ball into the stands. Like, I didn't know what was coming. My heart sank when he fielded that. When he fielded it backhanded, I said, that's weird. And then when he almost stumbled, I said, here we go. Like, honestly, you know that moment in, I don't know if you're very aware of the movie. And my friend here is going to give me the blank stare, I'm sure, because he's, you know, 12. But if you've ever seen The Water Boy, there's that moment. You've seen The Water Boy, or you give me the, oh, because it's Adam Sandler. There's the moment in Water Boy where I forget if the, I guess it's, yeah, at the end of the game when the pass is up in the air to Bobby Boucher. And in that moment, like, kind of time stops and everybody's just watching. And even the coach is kind of like tweaking his own, you know, is tweaking himself, and it's like a moment of ecstasy. Like, in that brief moment, that was me, and just stunned disbelief waiting for disaster to happen, right? Because I'm already on record on Twitter. Like, I knew it was going to happen. And when he handled that ball the way he did, I almost lost my mind. So for all you Gleyber haters, this one I can't argue. Gleyber Torres straight up was afraid of the moment. Afraid of the moment. And I know this is unfair because he did make a great play defensively at the end of the eighth inning. It didn't seem necessary. I thought Volpe could have handled it just fine, but he did come across, stab the ball, throw against his body, make a great play. He's capable of those. But in that moment, as that inning is falling apart, and this, for all the Clay Holmes haters that he can't be the closer, this, to me, is your best reasoning. They've got Jazz Chisholm at third base, who hasn't played the position. They've got Gleyber Torres, who looks scared of the big moment. Derek Jeter didn't have the best of range. Couldn't go up the middle as well as other shortstops in the league. We all know it. But I had no doubt Derek Jeter wanted the ball hit to him. And right now, watching that play, there is no chance. Gleyber Torres was saying in his head prior to that, hit it to me, hit it to me. There is no freaking way. That was unbelievable. And thankfully, the Yankees win. But I'm sorry. I know Clay Holmes put himself in that position in the ninth. Clay Holmes had good stuff. Clay Holmes walked two guys. Unacceptable. Totally agree. One was after a 10 or 12 pitch. It felt like a 12 pitch at bat after foul ball after foul ball after foul ball. He finally walks him. He gives up a blue pit and gets a ground ball. He came in and got Seager out in the eighth inning for a four-out save. He threw 45 pitches. Again, you want to? I'm sorry. That was a gutty performance. That, you want to argue the mentality of a closer? I have no doubt Clay has the mentality of a closer after that performance. He might blow it. I'm not telling you he's good enough where he'll never blow it. But the idea that he can't pitch the ninth, totally agree. Totally disagree. And then tell me that he doesn't miss enough bats. He's had four strikeouts in his last two innings. Clay Holmes is not perfect. They have bigger overall bullpen issues than just Clay Holmes being the closer. It scares the hell out of you, no doubt. All right, he doesn't come in and boom, boom, boom. He did the last time out against the Angels, but agreed, not enough. It's always something. The biggest argument against him is the defense right now in the infield scares the absolute bejesus out of me. But I walked away from that inning after what he had to, after the disaster that Leiter was, to come in the eighth, get Seager to ground out, get out of that inning, come back out, get two strikeouts, have one bad walk, have another great at bat that led to a walk. got a bloop hit, and then got the ground ball and stayed out there and pitched 45 pitches. He might not be able to pitch the rest of the – he might not be – you know what? Don't even fly him to Chicago, because I don't know if he's going to be able to pitch in any of the series against Chicago.
I hope there's no save opportunities in the series against Chicago. Because,
It's Weaver in game one for sure. Leiter probably can't pitch either tomorrow. Or later today, excuse me. But I'm sorry. I thought that was one hell of a gutty performance to not blow the game. I came away feeling better about Clay Holmes than I did worse. I came off feeling that's a tough son of a gun to be out there for 45 pitches. Everybody's shaking their head, how does Boone allow it? How does Boone allow it? I walked in with Lori. I said it was a gutty performance. She goes, hell yeah, it was a gutty performance. What the hell was Boone thinking? How the hell does Boone leave him out there for 45 pitches? Because who is he going to bring in, Hill? That's it. This bullpen is a major, major problem. You will not hear me say anything else. This bullpen scares the absolute hell out of me, including Clay Holmes. But yesterday, Clay Holmes did his job. Plain and simple, Clay Holmes did his job. Wasn't easy, wasn't perfect, wasn't pretty. Got a four-out save through 45 pitches and made the pitch at the end of the game to get an easy ground ball to save the game. They didn't lose. They won. Still a lot of questions, but a lot of good things trending in the right direction offensively. A lot of good things, at least for this series, trending in the right direction in the rotation. You're getting news that Clark Schmidt eventually is going to work his way back here. Oh, yeah. And Baltimore lost the game. And now they are tied for first place yet again. And we'll get into a decision that Hyde made that, you know what? If Aaron Boone made the same decision, we'd be killing him. And Bruce Bochy brings in a reliever. Just here, I get my backup and defend Boone yet again. Bruce Bochy brings in LeClerc to pitch and promptly spits the bit. And he had the pitcher before going to the bullpen intentionally walk someone, which is just flat out stupid. Why not have the new pitcher intentionally walk someone and get credit for a batter in this new rule where you have three guys that you have to face? Why not eliminate one of those guys? Bochy asleep at the wheel. But nobody cares. He won the World Series last year. Neither do I. He's a great manager. I'm just saying. Boone would have been killed for those things. 888-808-225. That was weird. 888-808-1019. All right, your Yankee calls next. That's right. A gutty performance. I stand on it. The guy threw 45 pitches. Yankees take 2 of 3. A lot good going on, but just enough bad to make you wonder how good this team is. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh, I like this. Sounds a little bit like an intro to like a 70s cop show. But
they do use it on an HBO show.
Do they?
The Bill Hader show. Like
Barry?
Barry, yes.
By the way, I did finish Game of Thrones, House of Dragons. Tonight, actually, with my wife. Or this morning, you know, last night, whenever. You know. Ooh, what a miserable season. How can anyone defend it? Anthony Gallo, the great Anthony Gallo, works for the digital team, hosting shows. You know, he's the one with the ridiculously deep voice. He's defending this season. House of Dragons was straight up trash this year. And the final episode, no different. No different. Absolute hot garbage. And I love season one. And I care enough where I'll probably watch season three. And yes, I don't consider this a spoiler, but the end of it is to set up next season, which will probably hit our TV screens in 5 years. I mean, it's just so, what a brutal. And then, of course, idiots. And here, I want to say this too, real quick. Hey, jerks, if you're out there And you're putting together this montages of freaking spoilers on social media. Right? And then if your brother-in-laws of people who want to watch this stuff, don't send it to me. But the people who actually make these videos, shame on you. Because there's a video going around where in Game of Thrones, now if you watch Game of Thrones, it's not like they made it up or took it from some obscure thing. It was on Game of Thrones. But I don't remember every stupid throwaway line from every season of Game of Thrones. But in Game of Thrones, like at two different distinct places, they give up straight up an absolute, like when I say spoiler, I mean the whole kit and caboodle. They tell you the ending of all of this. Like Joffrey's just casually walking and just spills the beans and says everything that takes place in this show, or at least the end of like one of the main characters, like you know how this all ends. And people put it together and put it on social media, and my stupid face is just scamming through, and suddenly that you ruined the entire show for me? Shame on you people. What's wrong with you? Can I have nothing? Can we please enjoy something? I want to watch this dopey show that was terrible this year, because I'm interested in what happens at the end, and you took that away from me. Now I have nothing. Nothing. And the HBO shows are the best because at least they're just on HBO. It's easy. They kind of get promoted well. They still run episodically, weekly or whatever. I like that about it. Like, other shows get lost for me. Yeah, it's awesome to be able to binge a show. Don't get me wrong. I kind of like it at times. But, like, they also get lost in the shuffle of a million different things. And nobody's talking about it week after week. It doesn't build any excitement. It says, hey, the new season of Stranger Things came out. Okay, great. And then nobody says anything. Like, 2 days later, it's like, oh, did you see the end of Stranger Things? And then that's it. Nobody talks about it for months. At least with Game of Thrones and these and House of Dragons, it's like, oh, the next episode's coming up, and then new stuff to talk about every week, and it feels like, oh, yeah, I'll go back and watch it. Like, a lot of these shows, as great as they may be on Netflix or Amazon or Apple TV or whatever the case may be, like this Vince Vaughn show is coming out on Apple TV. They're promoting it fairly well. I've seen it a couple times. It will disappear in 2 days, and I'll never hear of it again, and I won't go back to think of it. And when we have our nights that everybody has, like, what do you want to watch? I don't know. Like, I won't remember. Oh, yeah, that Vince Vaughn show. Because I won't remember it. Not that I have Apple TV. I got to draw the line somewhere. I have every other stupid package.
Apple did do the Presumed Innocent week by week.
Oh, they did?
Maybe they will do
that.
Yeah,
I know. There's still some that they try and do that. That's good. I like it. It should be weekly. I like the idea of weekly. Some shows should be weekly. Every once in a while, comedies or whatever, some dopey show. Put it out for I can watch all of it, I guess. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that. I'd rather have it every week.
HBO still values that Sunday slot where they are the trending topic.
Right. I think that, and it works. Like, I'm a huge, 24 is my favorite TV show of all time. Love Jack Bauer, love Kiefer Sutherland, love the whole thing. I wouldn't know what to do if they dropped all 24 episodes in one setting. I'd be done with it in 2 days because I love it so much, and then it's over. That sucks. There's no anticipation. There's no... I found this about in life, and I think it's very true. You need something to look forward to. I'm constantly... Even small, dopey things that I'll put more... I think I've said dopey about 100 times in the last 3 minutes. I'm not sure why. Even if it's like something small that's not that important, you got to like try and add the value to it or build things around it or just something to make it... You need to constantly look forward to things. And so the TV show provides you that. Oh, Sunday, great. Oh, yeah, tonight's. Like, how many times have you looked at your wife, your girlfriend, your husband, your significant other, whatever, and be like, right, tonight's House of Dragons, great. You didn't say that this year because the show is awful, but, oh, right. The season finale of Sex and the City, which, by the way, is not Sex in the City, it's Sex and the City. After my conversation with Lugie the other day, where we were talking about the Mandela effect and how we all remember certain things a different way, and I always remembered Ed McMahon as the face of Publishers Clearinghouse and giving out those big checks of money, and he had nothing to do with it. Apparently he was like in a different kind of money giveaway, but everybody thought it was Publishing Clearinghouse or, you know, I guess everybody thought Nelson Mandela died in prison is why they call it the Mandela effect. Apparently one of them is, Jiffy is another one. Everyone thinks it's Jiffy. It's just Jif. There's a bunch of different ones. I saw like Fruit of the Loom has a, on the logo, does it have a cornucopia or not? Along with the fruit, does it have like one of those basket cornucopia things? They're saying that's one that's actually, that they're perpetrating a lie to the American people, and it actually did. I don't know. But apparently it's not Sex in the City like everyone says. It's Sex and the City. I've always said Sex in the City. I never watched the dopey show.
I saw Sarah Jessica Parker filming like a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Really? Yeah, I've seen Matthew Broderick riding a bicycle a bunch of times around here. I've seen him a couple times, Paul Rudd a couple times, and I don't know his name, but the very distinguished-looking and handsome, all kind of like gray-haired guy from Mad Men, like one of the upper bosses in Mad Men, and he was in the Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon. I got to look up his name. But I've seen him like a bunch of times in the city.
Did Matthew Broderick run out over anyone with his bike?
Oh, you see, that's low blow, man. It's a low blow. I'm not even gonna tell that. That's ain't cool. I hope Matt, if you're listening,
come after me.
Rami.
I mean, what do you want?
Rami said it. Okay, he's wearing a tan colored hat. He's got a golf shirt on or a baseball. What is that?
It's a green
long sleeve Tiger Woods shirt. Just saying. All right, let's get back to the calls. I've riffed enough. And I'm not sure why, because I had all you guys waiting here. Mark in Queens, what's up, Mark?
Hey, C-Max. Sorry, bro. My phone just dropped the call.
That's
for some
okay.
Reason.
I'm just kidding with you. I was messing with you. Go ahead. What's up? Don't worry about it.
Not here. Chris, I'm a big fan of yours. I rarely miss, you know, a midnight ride, a 1 a.m. ride, 2 a.m. ride. You know, I even go so far as to promote you on X. You know,
thank you very much. So, I appreciate that, Mark.
Yeah, man.
This is where you stick the knife in the back, right? Because you hate my
no,
you're with me. Okay.
You know what? There will be a backstabbing, but it's definitely not you.
Oh, okay. Well, please. Hopefully, you know, listen. Talk it through before you do it.
No cursing, I promise.
Okay.
I mean, 100% of your views, I agree with. You know, everything from Boone to Cashman, you know, to Glaber. I agree with everything. I mean, even House of Dragon. I mean, House of Dragon was 1/10 of Game of Thrones. It was 1/10 as good, and maybe even that's too gracious.
Well, I thought the first season was pretty good. Maybe not as good as the best of Game of Thrones, but I thought it was pretty good. This year was very disappointing for me. But go ahead. What do you got?
First of all, even your views on Clay Holmes. I certainly you know, break the new high score on the blood pressure machine every time he's on.
No doubt.
But he's the closer.
I agree.
He's the closer.
They don't have an option.
There's no else who's the closer.
Nope.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, also, you're the generational talent of and the future and the now of WFAN.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
I like shtick. Steve Summers built a whole huge, glorious career of shtick.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt for you when you sat in with Loogie.
You felt for me?
I felt for you. His shtick was so tough to take. I wish I could have seen your face. I don't have yes. So I don't even know if it was on yes, but if I saw your face, I can only imagine how much your eyes must have been rolling. I like, you gave him resistance. You gave it to him.
Well, of course. Well, listen, here's the thing, and Mark, really, I appreciate all the compliments. Thank you very much. The thing with Loogie, one, I've worked with Loogie a bunch. He has definitely changed. He has sprouted his wings as a host. When I started working with him, both of us, really, I mean, I was hosting a little, was more regular, and I had the Friday and Saturday show, whatever I was doing. But when we first got the gig, and Craig and Evan were gracious enough to say, hey, we're off for Christmas, you know, why don't you do a couple hours? First, I'm going to let my son do a couple hours, but then you can do a couple hours. And I was like, that's amazing, fantastic. And then, like, we did a couple times. So Loogie was kind of just getting into hosting. I was doing it solo for a long time. At that point, but so that's why I took the lead on a lot of shows. I was just more experienced at hosting and stuff. But He's definitely, you know, sprouted his wings. He's been doing the bridge shows, doing a lot of stuff. So he's a different guy, but I know him very well. All right. And we work together. And this is like guys who work in this business, you know, it's a second. We always joke about work-wise. Like, because we're in that room, just the two of us, for, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. And we're constantly talking to each other about other things, like Monzo and myself, when I used to work on Francesa's show, that was, you know, 5.5 hours. I mean, Monzo is the original work wife. I mean, we just years and years and years of just the two of us in that room, day after day after day. You see them more than you see your wife and family, really. I mean, so I know Lugi very well for just a couple of years of being, you know, work married to him. And he is negative Tommy. Okay, I'm not going to try and blow up his spot. I'm sure he's trying very hard to convince himself he's positive Tommy, and he might just believe it. He is negative Tommy.
Lugi
is negative Tommy. So did I give him pushback on his positive Tommy stuff? Oh, you bet your ass I did. Because this is the guy, I mean, this is the guy who, you know, just can't stand the Yankees. Everything is impending doom. You want to talk about little brother syndrome. The idea he's on the radio talking about who's the big brother gave me the biggest laugh of all time because he is numero uno, little brother complex when it comes to Met fans. So maybe he's just working through some things. But he's doing a great job. I think he's a very good host. It was fun working with him. I thought we had a good time. You know, we did a lot of, you know, silly stuff. He came at me with a whole bunch of silly stuff. He wanted to talk Titanic and stuff. And I thought we had a lot of laughs and a good time. I love Tommy. And it wasn't hard to work for him. I wasn't rolling my eyes, but I did push back on some stuff because I'm having fun with a friend who is all of a sudden changed. And I mean, for years, negative Tommy. I went to the playoff game where Max Scherzer got absolutely lit up against San Diego. We were sitting in the SMY booth together. I promise you, two pitches into that game, positive Tommy was nowhere to be found. Okay, I can tell you that right now. All right? He had things to say about Scherzer before warm-ups. All right? So please, positive Tommy was nowhere to be found on that playoff game as Max Scherzer, what, gave up 3 home runs and 7 runs. There was no positive Tommy. So I pushed back on it because all I know is negative little brother syndrome Tommy. But no, it was not hard to work for him, nor did I have to roll my eyes. Tommy's the best. Nacho in Cliffside Park. What's up, Nacho?
Hey, C-Mac, listen. I love Lugi. He's one of the guys I look forward to listening on this station, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get on the... I grew up, I'm 26. You know, yeah. I couldn't watch this series this weekend. I've been celebrating my birthday.
Oh, so happy birthday.
I watched the game. Thank you so much. I watched the game Friday night, the shutout. And, you know, I'm on X. I'm active on X. And I was going to say,
when I was growing up in high school, on X meant something completely different. But, yes, you're on Twitter.
You know, hey, I mean Twitter. No, but I grew up a Met fan. My father's been a Met fan since he came to this country in 73, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So my whole life has been Mets, all right? I love the game. I love baseball. And as a lifelong Met fan, and this series, I mean, this series, this is the Mets. This is a synthesis when they get swept and they get 2 shutouts in a row. It's a synthesis of what the history of this franchise is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Listen, Lugi, I've been hearing Lugi for the last years, negative, positive. This is the nature of a Mets fan, C-Mac. You know what I mean? One day we're positive. The Mets are on fire. Yeah. We're positive. And then we lose and we're negative. We're the bipolar fan base. You know what I mean? This has been I remember I was like 8 or 9 years old in 2006 when I watched the Cardinals kick us out of the postseason. I remember sitting there and I was positive. And I remember my father, he went out for the weekend and we were speaking before and my dad said, oh, this might be our year. This might be the year that we win it, bro. And then we got kicked out of the Cardinals, and right away, the emotions are no longer positive. This series, this weekend, I knew it was going to happen, but knowing and the scar that this team has left on me in the 26 years that I've been on this planet has been when we need to win, we don't win. Right? This whole, all of this conversation of Big Brother, we swept the Yankees in the series of the Subway Series, and then we can't get a single win against the Mariners. We can't win the series against the A's. We can't Angels. We can't sweep the Rockies. I mean, this is the nature. This is why I'm not on the positive train, because until I see them holding up that trophy at the end of the season come October, I'm not positive. I am not confident in the team. We can have the pitching, we can have the hitting, we can have whatever, but until I see them in my lifetime hold up that trophy, I will never be a positive Met fan. This is a rant. This isn't me being crazy. This is me being looking at the facts, at the concrete facts of this franchise in this history. You could bring in Stearns, you could bring in Cohen, you can bring in whatever hitter, you can bring in any pitcher, any pitching staff, and this team will somehow find a way to lose. Will somehow come to October and find a way to lose. This week has shown really what this team can do. And what this team can do is lose. In the moment that they need to win, they lose.
Well,
I have suffered in the last 26 years watching this team lose. And listen, next year I'll be a Mets fan. Next year I will go in hoping that they win and they will lose. This is what my life has been.
I understand, Nacho. I get you. I don't know if I would put this weekend in the category of, you know, when the Mets need to win, they lose. I mean, they need to win because of the position they're in, but I don't think this weekend against Seattle, especially still being a half a game out of the wild card, I don't think this was some ride or die now or never type series where now the season's dead. I think you gotta give it a little bit more faith in that, Nacho. It's a disappointing weekend. Don't get me wrong, very disappointing, and an overall disappointing road trip against lesser teams that you should have done better against. There's no doubt. You can't lose a series to the Angels. Yankees did it. Can't do it. Can't get swept in a series. I mean, you want to sweep the Colorado Rockies? They just beat the Atlanta Braves 2 out of 3. I don't know about sweep. I think taking 2 out of 3 is fine, but you had to do it every series. And getting one against, you know, this would have been a big win for the Mets just to salvage this road trip and salvage, you know, getting a game against Seattle. And again, the offense does nothing. So, yeah, I'm concerned about the offense because that's right now they went flat for 3 days. And that's the only way they win is by scoring a ton of runs. That's it. They don't have any other element of a team. I mean, I know Manaea had 2 shutouts in his previous 2 starts, but they're just not good enough in the rotation to shut you down and win games 2-1. They're not good enough in the bullpen to hold on when a starter doesn't go more than 6. Like, they're not good enough to beat you any other way than just pounding you. And so to see the offense go cold here is troublesome. But the way you're talking, like, this was when they needed to win and now the season is lost, I mean, that's a bit premature. But it was a disappointing weekend. Ross in Bergen County. What's up, Ross?
Hey, C-Mac. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Not bad. Good. It's real quick, cool hearing you reminisce about the good old days with the Carton and Roberts. And just a couple of days ago, hearing you and Loogie, it's kind of eerie how similar you two stand on Mike and Dog. It kind of reminds me of Bizarro Jerry. Kind of like just overall the total aspect of it. So it's always great when you two are on. And just overall, hearing cool. Carton on the play-by-play.
I talked about that yesterday on Saturday. I'll talk a little bit more about it. I didn't get a chance to listen almost at all today. I was at my in-laws and we were watching on the TV. So I got to go back. Maybe I'll have Rami play some of the highlights from today. I did hear the final call, which I thought was good. But I thought Craig and Susan did a great job. I really did. I thought Craig really, they had fun. You knew Craig was going to be able to do the talk show kind of part of what comes natural to a baseball broadcast, maybe more than any other sport. But, I mean, technically, I thought he was, you know, he had his moments where he wasn't perfect. He called Juan Soto Luis Soho, which I thought was funny. But ultimately, the voice was, even early on, he said today, I saw him put out a tweet. He said today the voice went up. The first call, the first call of the first game of the doubleheader, his voice cracked. So it was, but besides that, I thought he did a really good job.
You know what I'll say, though, is, you know, if he was the play-by-play guy, you're not really there so much for the analysis. He was there for the entertainment, and he
right.
sure as hell brought it. And Absolutely. He also brought ears in, too. People that might not, you know, not no knock on the
no
current
doubt.
Guys, but people who might
no
not
doubt.
Normally listen in for a normal game, people were listening in. So I
right.
thought it was an awesome gig.
No,
and like you said, too, this was a perfect time to do it when there was no distinct guy doing the play-by-play. So that was awesome to hear. And on the Mets front, I mean, listen. You look at a team like Seattle, I think, you know, their pitching staff, I don't even think there's a debate. It is the best in the league, specifically the rotation and the bullpen's loaded, too.
Yep.
And I think the fact that to lose the series is one thing, to get swept is another,
yep.
but to be shut out for 25 innings
yeah.
is just on another level. And you almost went through all three games, if not for a garbage time homer by McNeil. And just the situational hitting again, Winker's a glaring issue for me now, man. It's look, I saw somebody put out a tweet. Cause saying he's Daniel Vogel back on Ozempic, and they're honestly not far off. I mean, this guy's looking at strike threes left and right, and it's getting bad, man. We're saying Darren Ruff, Vogel back levels. You kind of compare it. Everybody bringing up Holderman's name 2 years later, or yeah, 2 years later. You know, he's had his issues, but now you see Tyler Stewart. I saw a tweet. He struck out like 13 in single A or whatever. This guy might wind up being the next Randy Johnson for a guy who goes 0-for-4 on a daily basis. So. I don't know if I'm at a level like the previous caller was at just yet because, you know, Seattle, albeit a good team, I'd be more pissed about the 3-3 against Colorado and L.A. And listen, man, they can't mirror that no less at home against Oakland and Miami. You saw what they did in September of 22, and they got to set themselves in the best possible spot for that make-or-break San Diego-Arizona stretch. I'm not even including Baltimore. It's the seven games between
right.
San Diego and Arizona.
Right.
If that is going to legitimately make or break their entire season.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly, I got to say 6-0 against Miami and Oakland, man.
That's a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but that's a lot to ask.
Oakland's lineup is good.
Yeah.
The pitching's abysmal. And then, I mean, Miami, you're looking at a team where their payroll was $14 million.
No, I get it.
And I know that doesn't mean a lot.
Well, I mean, they just beat San Diego today. It's just, and I think Dylan Cease was on the mound.
True.
So, I mean, it is what it is. I hear you. The Ozempic line was tremendous, by the way. Great job, Ross. Ross always brings it. Ross is a great caller. I understand that. I think that's too much to ask. And now, I mean, you mentioned, and I mentioned it too. We all said it, but it's getting to the point where I don't know if San Diego and Arizona. Are make or break. Other than they're good teams on the road, it's going to be tough to win those games. But they're 4.5 games better now, and they don't lose. Ketel Marte is an MVP candidate. He's been great. He's got 30 home runs and 89 RBIs, or whatever, 80-something RBIs. Ketel Marte has exploded here, and they don't lose. They're 4.5 games better than the Mets. That's even if the Mets sweep that series, they're still behind them. Like, I don't know if those games mean the same much, other than the Mets, you know, you can't get beat up. But is it going to impact if you win 2 out of 3 and you pick up a game? You're 3.5. I mean, it's no longer where we thought it was when they were all jumbled up for a half a game. The Mets have been losing. Atlanta's been losing. And those two teams don't lose. Those games are just now difficult games against good opponents. I don't know if they have the same impact in the standings or who's going to make the wild card. Those two teams are in. Now it's like if you look at the standings, which I'll do, on the other side, he's giving me the break sign. But if you look at the standings here, actually, what the hell? He's not my boss. If you look at the standings here, in the wild card, now, of course, it's not loading. Like, it's the Cardinals and the Giants, and the Cubs are 3 games back. Really, it's Atlanta, the Mets, the Cardinals, and the Giants for one spot. The Diamondbacks and the Padres have separated themselves. They're 4 games up. That's not insurmountable necessarily, but that's 4 games, and they're the 2 hottest teams in baseball. They're both 8-10 over 8-2 over their last 10. So you got the 2 hottest teams in baseball that have now separated themselves. They're 4 games up. It's Atlanta, the Mets, the Cardinals, and the Giants. Those 4 teams battling for one spot. That's where the Mets are. So, yeah, those games against the Diamondbacks and Padres are big, but now it's just about trying not to get embarrassed by 2 of the hotter teams in baseball and playing well against 2 good teams. It's not about trying to catch them in the standings or beat them in the wild card race. They're 4 games up. They're 4.5 up on the Mets. 888-808-1019. 2 hours down, 2 more to go. McMonagle here with you on the fan. We'll come right back.